I'm Alexia Ridley with Athens News Matters, a show dedicated to local news, current events, and community outreach efforts. Today, panelists discuss a disciplinary hearing scheduled for a UGA grad student regarding a past arrest, concerns regarding Baldwin Hall, and the latest regarding the proposed roundabout on Broad Street. Those topics and more next on Athens News Matters. Hello, I'm Alexia Ridley, host of Athens News Matters. I'm joined by my regular panelists, Lee Shearer from the Athens Banner-Herald, Blake Odd from Flagpole, and Gwen O'Looney from WXAG. So I think we should start with the latest developments regarding Iremi Osei Frimpong. But he actually is facing a disciplinary hearing regarding an arrest in his past that I believe was not disclosed, or that's what the allegation is.
Well, University of Georgia policy requires that you, when you are applying for admission, I think this applies to employees too, you have to tell them of any arrest that's in your past, except for a minor traffic
violation.
So, and also, well, a tipster who might have been a philosophy faculty member tipped the UGA officials off that he had omitted being arrested in a 2011 Occupy Wall Street arrest, which was later dismissed in Chicago, and also that he had attended the University of Chicago for a couple of years, which...
And two others.
Which is also pretty good universities.
Excellent universities.
That's...
And he said... That he
he says it's a witch hunt, and it's because of his controversial statements earlier, which had been objected to by a very conservative writer on a web page. I forget the name of it.
Campus Reform, I believe, is the name of the website.
Which is trying to get rid of liberal professors.
That's their whole purpose.
That's
and the investigation started very soon after this conservative writer and recent UGA graduate appealed to university graduates to stop donating to the university until they fired Iremi.
Right.
And he, the writer claimed that a donor was withholding a $2.5 million donation.
He claimed that.
Well, we don't know if that's actually true, but that was what he said. And that is the point where the university's response to the controversy changed from, you know, defending his First Amendment rights, and somebody had filed a complaint with the Equal Opportunity Office, and they cleared him and said he did said this on his own time, you know, First Amendment, it's got nothing to do with the university, so that was dismissed. And then, you know, if the donations stop coming, then that's the point where the university said that they were going to explore every available option.
Every available legal option,
presumably to punish him somehow.
And consult the attorney general.
And they said this
on a Twitter tweet, which is just really kind of blows my mind.
Oh, I don't know. It's very in now. You know, our president.
Well, they kind of dealt with the controversy by any time anybody said anything negative about what Iremi had said. His racial comments that, you know, somebody from the university was right there to tweet the statement at him, which is kind of weird. It's like they're stalking people, but this all happened around the same time. And so, you know, this anonymous tip comes in and then this investigation starts into his academic background. And, even though the university says they don't have anything to do with each other, it's certainly reasonable to think that, you know, perhaps this is their way of retaliating.
Right. And that is what is the greatest danger here. Is that everyone who works for the University of Georgia now is on notice that if they cause any trouble, if there's any, that they will look into every
political protester that, well, sorry,
or whatever, you know, let's say that they are sinful in some outrageous public way or whatever their private life might carry, because all of this was outside the classroom, and I'm not for Iremi and what he thinks or whatever. I don't even know. I haven't, you know, I can't write that down for you. But I'm very concerned about the impression that this will give anybody who wants to be stable in their job at the University of Georgia. And I understood his rationale for having not included. I remember, you know, being my age, I remember very much that during the protest against the Vietnam anti-war demonstrations, that people would get arrested and then released without any kind of, you know, and most of those people did not see that those kind of things needed to be included in every, they didn't carry them forward. When charges are dismissed, often it's at the fault of the authorities that they've done too wide a arrest, you know, that they've gathered too much. So I think that's one reason. And the other is that he says that he did not get philosophy courses, but, which is his field, at those other schools. Yes. And he didn't attend them that long, is what he said. And have you ever filled out that University of Georgia thing online? I have. And believe me, you were very tempted to leave out little extraneous moments, you know.
That policy itself seems strange to me, that you have to disclose an arrest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can see where if I'd been arrested for, and convicted of something horrible, but what if I'm falsely arrested? Well, what if the charges against me were dismissed?
As they were in this case.
What if they were expunged?
Yeah, but the state's record on expungements, some of the expungements, it takes 3 years for some of these people to get there. And during that time, they have to carry the stigma of a mistake, and not their mistake.
And what if I'm wrongly arrested?
Yeah.
In the first place.
Right.
Well, these things, I mean, they all seem to me like technicalities. I mean, he is guilty of them under the student code, and I don't think that he would even disagree with that, but it really is of no consequence. I mean, it was a minor trespassing charge, a misdemeanor, a municipal offense that was dismissed as unconstitutional, and I think his explanation for leaving off the University of Chicago on his application is reasonable. And in fact, in the report from the Office of Student Conduct that he has given to reporters and other people, it states that the philosophy department said that if he had listed his time at the University of Chicago on the application, it actually would have made him a more attractive candidate.
That's right.
So there was no... you know, he didn't gain anything by leaving
it
off.
No intent to deceive.
No. And he was, they said he was one of the top candidates already, even without it, but it would have made him stronger. So, you know, he really had no incentive to intentionally break the rules, and it didn't benefit him in any way. So
we should probably say that.
He's handed over the transcript, and he's given them a letter from the University of Chicago stating that, you know, he was a student in good standing and had no problems there, but that has not satisfied the university. They want to be able to go through all of his emails and everything from his time there, and you know,
it's harassment.
And Irony thinks that they're on a fishing expedition trying to find some excuse to get rid of him for political reasons, and he doesn't want them, you know, to have a blanket permission to just go through, you know, all of his personal.
And meanwhile, the ACLU and the couple of other free speech organizations have come to his defense, and also saying that this is harassment and will have a chilling effect on everyone's free speech.
Right.
And the Faculty Senate of the Franklin College of Arts and Sciences will vote on what they might say about this at a special meeting called for next Tuesday.
Blake, can you give us a little background about Irmy, why he got in this hot water in the beginning?
Sure, yeah. He's very active on social media and made some comments about race issues that some conservatives took offense to. He talks about
crappy white people and said some white people may have to die before things get resolved. And this writer took that as an incitement to violence.
Right.
Which,
and actually, he was talking about the white woman who died in Charlottesville.
Who was run over by the white supremacist.
Right.
Yeah, so that caused a stir, but and apparently this writer, I believe, also confronted him at a Young Democrats meeting.
Yes.
And they had some sort of exchange.
And that was on YouTube, but it was filmed by the other side, not Arami.
Yeah, but I don't, he didn't, you know, he handled that pretty well, actually. I think the guy was trying to bait him into getting into an argument, and he, you know, played it off pretty well, I thought, so.
He makes very legitimate points. He might be doing it or have been doing it in a somewhat inflammatory manner.
He is inflammatory. He has an inflammatory personality. He's very abrasive in some ways, et cetera, because he's a very intelligent person. He's an academic. He's in our academic, should have this range of opinions, the range of ideas. These young people have got to be able to hear and think about issues from different perspectives while they're at the University of Georgia.
And his teaching evaluations, from what I've heard, are very good.
Another matter which has been very controversial, which is the Baldwin Hall bodies and how UGA administrators responded to that situation. Just almost exactly a year ago, the Franklin College of Arts and Sciences Faculty Senate formed an ad hoc committee to look into very broadly what had happened after workmen in late 2015 discovered bodies that were buried in an area that was part of a renovation and expansion project at Baldwin Hall. And Wednesday morning, the Faculty Senate posted that lengthy report, which is really harshly critical of UGA administrators, and calls for them to apologize to a young faculty member that the PR department of UGA vilified in print, and to the African-American community, and also take some other steps. The Faculty Senate has scheduled a meeting next week to talk about this report and how they might follow up on it.
And this is from within. This is University of Georgia saying we're not proud of the way our administration handled this situation.
Well, not only not proud, I think that's putting it lightly.
Well, I mean, you know.
You know, I am still reading this report. It just came out, and I've skimmed it, but I've not. It is rather long. It's over 100 pages, and I've not finished reading it. But the thing that jumps out at me is throughout, as with Irami, and throughout this report, there is apparently a culture of intimidation among the administration, where they have intimidated students and faculty members for political reasons, which obviously bothers the committee, which is made up of five professors. So
there were not just intimidation. That's the strongest thing, but also just ignoring the community, ignoring what other people with expertise might have to say. One thing that I learned that was very interesting was this young faculty member with great expertise that is owed an apology actually advised the university to engage the community, because this is what you're supposed to do in this situation, months before they disclosed the fact that these were people of African descent, and perhaps ancestors of people who live here in Athens today.
And they sat on that information for some time as well, I think about 10 weeks.
Sometime in December to March, March.
Which when they announced it, and they actually made the decision to reinter the remains at Oconee Hill Cemetery, which bothered a lot of people in the local African-American community. When they were under the impression that the remains were of European descent before the DNA results came in that said that they were of African descent, which I thought was interesting.
So they chose Oconee before they knew that they were African American?
That's correct, yes.
Well, it's interesting to me. I think it's amazing that they keep talking about who told us to do this. You know, they use the attorney general, they use the state archaeological.
And the state archaeologist, they keep saying, we're following the instructions of the state archaeologist. And the state archaeologist says, well, I just gave them advice. They don't have to follow it at all. There's nothing saying
that. And it's not entirely clear even what his advice was in total.
Yeah. Right. And he also may have advised them to have some sort of town hall meeting and engage the community, which is several professors also did before this process started.
It's just standard practice.
Yeah, that's right.
In the field of anthropology.
And ethic. It's standard ethical practice.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's not even archaeology. There is a very complete law of the state. When we built Bear Creek Reservoir, we had a cemetery that was on the grounds. And it's a very considerate and respectful process, but it does require contacting the families, if you know it, or identifying them for sure. And so there were lots of steps here that are part of the process that are recognized and done throughout our state by the Highway Department, et cetera, that the University of Georgia ignored. And what bothers me is that all over the world, when they're in Greece working, when they're in Mexico working, et cetera, they follow religiously good archaeological process, and they did not do that here
and
on
though,
their own
those,
territory.
Those procedures that you mentioned, another interesting thing I thought in this report, the procedures you mentioned, they only have to be followed by state law if you know that the remains are there. And UGA supposedly discovered them accidentally, even though, as the report points out, that even a cursory bit of research, they would have discovered that
the old Athens cemetery is
much larger than what than the borders of it that are fenced off, and they would have known what they would have found.
African Americans had been removed
previously when it was built in the first place, mm-hmm. Right? So they should have known they were there, but the fact that they discovered them by accident. You know, what I'm trying to say is they didn't have any incentive to do any research to even find out if they were there, because if they were going to find them, it's better to find them by accident, and then they can do whatever they want. Whereas if they'd known they were there beforehand, like Gwen said, there are all these procedures that you have to follow, and they would have had to have gotten a permit from the state to move them. So that could have thrown a monkey wrench into the entire project. They may have had to have halted construction entirely, which they did, but only temporarily. But I'm saying, you know, they may not have been able to move forward on it at all,
it
ever.
It might have been a much longer process, happened.
Another question the report raised was what to do about the bodies that are still there under the parking lot and perhaps under the building. And they did suggest that maybe this time there could be some community consultation about that.
Well, you know, I wanted to go see Below Baldwin, and I was delayed a little bit, but I got there a half an hour before the show began, and the line was all the way around.
What is Below Baldwin?
That's the movie that was done as a doctoral product.
Joe Levine, who was a recent UGA graduate, directed it. I think he was an undergrad. I don't think it was a doctoral project.
He started it as a class project
right. And then completed it after graduation. And I was there too, Gwen, and it was literally every seat in the it was standing room only. There were people sitting on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, it was fuller than full. I mean, I heard over 400 people. I don't know what the capacity of the Morton is, but you know, it was over capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So there's obviously a lot of interest in this issue.
Right.
But, you know, the university's response has just been, it's been consistent now for, you know, over three right. years, almost 4 years. And they get, you know, they're so defensive about it. And they really need to drop this defensive attitude, I think, because they're only digging themselves into a bigger hole.
It reminds me of the Jan Kemp affair. If you read Takedown by Hugh Henry, it is so interesting to see that they really thought that nobody would have a problem with the way they handled things. That everybody would understand that that they had been inconvenienced.
I just think it never occurred to anyone at the beginning that in the administration, I don't think that these remains might be somebody's great great grandfather, and that people in Athens might care what happened to them, because it could be their ancestors. I just don't think that idea ever occurred to them. They were really blindsided by that, and they never shifted gears. You know, they just kept on saying, well, you know, th- the same thing over and over again.
Something telling to me is the inscription on the memorial they subsequently erected at Baldwin Hall. And I visited it not too long ago for the first time, and it bothered me. And I finally figured out why. It's this sentence on there that says, upon the guidance of the state archaeologist, the bodies were reinterred at Oconee Hill. And what bothered me about that, I finally understood, is that's not about these people. That's about the university and defending their actions, right. Which is, that's kind of the central thing that's going on here.
And there's lots of evidence in this report that they don't really want to grapple with the issue of slavery. I mean, there's little things like, you know, they initially denied permission to have a
forum.
Town hall forum type event at the Russell Library to discuss this, and then eventually relented. But, you know, there are professors who reported that David Lee, the vice president of research, when they issued a call for proposals for research related to all of this, said that he didn't want any projects that were about slavery. Which is sort of beside the point, or defeats the purpose, I mean. But there were people who reported that the administration lost interest in their research once they found out that the remains were of African descent. They weren't interested in supporting their research or publicizing it anymore. So, I mean, just lots of little tidbits like that that make you think that, you know, the administration really does not want to acknowledge or deal with the history involved here. So, which is unlike a lot of other universities. I mean, there are 50-something universities in the slavery consortium, including University of Virginia, Ole Miss, South Carolina, North Carolina. Lots of major southern universities are involved in grappling with the legacy of the fact that their institutions were built on the backs of enslaved people.
Right. Some not in the South, like Georgetown.
True. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Well, up in New England, too. I mean, that's...
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, Georgetown was actually funded by the slave trade. I mean,
right.
They sold
selling
slaves
it,
and used the money to build the university.
Yeah.
So.
The university never owned slaves. It only rented them, University of Georgia.
Major institutions benefited from that free slave labor.
Right. And not to mention all the administrators and faculty and even students who had slaves on campus.
Right.
So mm-hmm.
So next week there will be an update. We'll follow up. This is a topic that Athenians are still interested in, so mm-hmm. we'll definitely be following up. And I know we also wanted to discuss a roundabout on Broad Street, slightly different topic, but we have a few minutes left.
Well, you know, this actually does kind of relate a little bit because it is an equity issue. You know, we're talking about a major road that splits two African-American neighborhoods that is really hard to get across. I mean, it's a huge barrier. There are very few crosswalks.
This is we're talking down at
Broad Street and Hancock Avenue.
Down at the bottom
in
of
Plaza,
this hill,
that area.
The cars bottom. Go really
right.
fast.
So it's very hard to cross. It divides a neighborhood, and there's a proposal that the commission is going to vote on early next month to build a roundabout at the intersection of Hancock and Broad Street that'll slow the traffic down and make it easier to cross because you only have to cross two lanes at a time. And there's no crosswalk at that intersection currently, but people are always crossing back and forth on foot anyway. So that'll make it much safer.
Right. But, you know, that just seems like a bad investment to me because very few people use Hancock to go across Hancock. And now Hancock is only one block from Broad before you get to a campus that doesn't want you driving on Hancock
I'm
at all.
I'm not sure I agree with you about it being a bad investment.
I think it's a very bad investment.
I disagree, too.
Yeah.
I think it will make the intersection much safer. It'll make it
It'll
make it actually better for drivers because even though it'll be... You'll only be going 15 miles an hour when you go around the roundabout.
And you'll get through it
getting
faster,
rid of the light means
really.
That you'll get through it faster. It'll decrease traffic by 70%. So I think it benefits everyone.
Right. It closes off Plaza. Why wouldn't that be allowed to be a part of the the, you know.
GDOT says that the plaza is too close to Hancock to be part of the roundabout. And so right now the proposal is to close.
It's a very wonky intersection, and that's not set in stone.
That is not set in stone. They may end up not doing that. There are ways around it. You know, it would involve demolishing a business at that corner. But
I hope GDOT's paying a lot of this money because they're the ones that created that intersection.
Well, so we're splitting this with GDOT.
Well, we shouldn't be splitting 50-50, believe me.
Well, if we don't split it 50
years and years.
If we don't split it 50-50, it'll be 20 years until they get to it. If we put a little bit of money in, they'll move it up the list. So And we have money. This is a T-Splos project.
Oh yeah,
specifically about West Broad.
Use our pennies to match the state dollars.
But that's what that money is for. It's $4 million sitting there. Yeah.
But let's
specifically
let's hear why you don't like this.
Right.
We were cutting you off.
Well, because I really believe that look at most of the roundabouts and the effect of roundabouts. They have streets coming in of equal weight. What we have there is a huge weight on Broad and a very strong weights on Hancock and Plaza. I know because all of Cobham and Boulevard even come out, you know, use Plaza. And I don't think they'll mind getting less traffic, but you do not have a balanced intersection at that point. And I think that's one of the keys I always understood for a roundabout was that it would be a balanced intersection. Like Tallahassee Road, we showed that was a balanced intersection because of all the Whitehall traffic coming in.
I don't think that has to be true. I'm thinking now of the two roundabouts proposed, certainly, in the Oconee County town of Bishop. Those would be on 441 on either end of town and would be designed in part to take traffic out of the middle of town.
That's right.
And it would, and there is not equal balance at those places.
Right.
And
but
Gwen, I just think you're mad because you are going to have to go a block out of your way to get onto Broad Street.
I disagree because now Bishop though is a great example. What they're trying to do is to save Bishop instead of it becoming a highway. And so that's why I'll never forget the mayor of Bishop standing up and saying, you know, you're never going to, you know, put a four-lane highway through the middle of my town. And that's what those two things at Bishop are, and I'm for that.
The mayor now opposes the roundabouts, but that's an entirely different kind of issue.
I know that Bishop has fought for years to avoid becoming just a part of the highway. If you're going toward Madison, they don't mind tearing down the left. They've said that several times.
Now, I had not heard that. I know that the University of Georgia, which has its equestrian facility down there, has continues to oppose the roundabout scheme and a short bypass on this side versus a longer bypass on the other.
We are out of time, so we'll end here. I want to thank my panelists, Gwen Aluni, Blake Odd, and Lee Shearer. To hear this show again, visit WUGA.org for a podcast. For questions or comments, visit our Facebook page. This show does not reflect the views of the station, Flagpole, WXAG, or the Banner Herald. Athens News Matters is a production of WUGA, a broadcast service of the University of Georgia. I'm Alexia Ridley.